At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
The Koi Gig Pod.
Morning, Eileen.
Think I owe you a phone call, do I, Kathleen?
You do. I was going to bring that up. I'm sadly down a podcast host, but as long as you qualify us for the Euros, I'll forget the Eileen.
Subscribe to the Koi Gig Pod on the Off the Ball app now.
Off the Ball Daily.
All right, I'm delighted to be joined in studio by the Irish hockey captain, Katie Mullen. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks. Thanks for having me.
After the month it has been, I feel how are you has added weight to it at the moment. How has the last month been since Olympic qualification?
Yeah, it's been a challenging month. I mean, lots of support around us, which is good. We've spent as much time together as a group and a team, and I think that speaks volumes of the culture that we have in the Irish women's hockey team. And there's been a lot of comfort in that.
But okay, yeah, so it wasn't a case of we didn't guess the ultimate aim, we'll see in a few months' time. You've actually got comfort from each other.
Yeah, definitely. And we took some time away and went away together for a few days, which was important, just to be in each other's company. And I suppose, you know, we all know how the other one feels, and that's important for us to lean on each other in a tough time.
Sports people never like to look past the next game, they say, but an Olympic Games in Paris, I'm sure, was something you had thought about, even logistically, the ease of access for family members to get over and watch. Had you allowed yourself, had people around you allowed yourself to think about going to the Olympics?
Yeah, I think when we committed to the journey and the cycle, that was what was sitting in the end of it as the reward. But I think the last couple of weeks has given us time to sort of reflect on the entire journey. And you know, you hear it in high performance sport, but the journey really is the beauty of it all. The reward at the end is the nice part. That's the bit that you that motivates you, and that's where a lot of the desire comes from. But the journey really is special, and I suppose us as a group only understand how that has felt over the last couple of years.
The not getting that final goal, though, when you've been sitting down over the last few weeks, because from the outside we look at the Olympics for hockey as the ultimate goal. I know there's plenty of important tournaments and milestones along the way, but thinking about the next few months, what might have been and what's going to be, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, I think as high performance athletes, one of the things that we do is we reflect and we learn from every moment. And of course, you're going to think of moments in the game where, oh, if I'd done this or if I'd done that, would it be different? That's natural. That's all part of being a top level athlete. I think that the thing that you reflect and you understand is that in that moment, the person I was made the decision that I did for a reason. And given all the information you have in any of those moments in team sport, you make the best informed decision that you can. And when you sit now and you reflect, you're a different person than the person that was there. And you can reflect and think, you know, maybe now the person I am might have made a slightly different decision, or the team, you know, but you have to understand that in that moment you're doing the very best for the team, and the team is doing the very best to get the outcome that we desire.
Might be the best comparison, but it's almost like when the inspector's going in after an air crash and they're analysing it, they never apportion blame. They look at what went on in the training beforehand and what might have contributed to it, that it's not about looking back and going, well, if that person had done this, actually, why did we make those decisions at those times in that match?
Yeah, well, hindsight is a wonderful thing, and you learn so much from these failures. Like that's what informs your next steps forward. That's how you get better. That's how you get stronger. And you know, unfortunately, that's the position that we're in now. But we do look forward, and it's always been about so much more than one tournament or one opportunity. It's been about sport and women in sport and hockey in Ireland and growing the sport and leaving a legacy that hockey becomes far bigger than I ever would have dreamed of as a young girl growing up playing it.
When you were on your holidays, I'm sure nobody said, let's take out the video of those games, the match against Great Britain or the match against Spain. But have you allowed yourself a chance to sit down and watch those games?
I haven't watched them yet. No, honestly, no, not yet. I will in time. I can remember them very vividly, but I think that's all part of the learning process is being able to sit down and watch and reflect and learn from that. But that
not
hasn't been just yet for me, no.
I do always find it so interesting, the talk of the journey. And I always think of Andy Moore and sitting in that chair, the former Mayo footballer, and talking about losing in, I think it was 7 All-Ireland finals. And he makes the same point of, actually, I've spent the last 15 years with my best mates, 5-6 days a week, having the time of my life. And yeah, God, I'd love to have won one, but actually, you couldn't swap it for everything that I've been through. That bit that we don't see of actually the hours spent together in training, the relationships that you have. It's a great thing that while you're still playing, you have that sense of perspective, actually, that while we're so cutthroat in the media of there's success and there's failure, actually, there's a big bit in between for ye.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, one of the things that, you know, is when you reflect on it, one of the things you're actually like, oh, it's the journey that we were on, and partly that journey, you know, you don't get the next 6 months of seeing where we were gonna get to. It's maybe not necessarily the bit at the end of it of going to the Olympics. It's actually the rate of progress and the group and the growth and the team that we were, and you get 6 months of that you're not getting to see what was next. That's the part that you're almost longing for.
Right.
But for us, what's the beauty of it is our group is so young, and we're ready to go take the next step. And although it looks slightly different than the Olympics this summer, there's definitely still huge opportunity for growth and for us to get hockey in Ireland to the level we want to, and to make the Pro League and to break into the top 10 in the world. And that's really, that's the overall goal here. That's the big, big picture.
And can you put into context how big a setback it is then not making the Olympics? Because again, from the outside, we look, this was a group that reached a World Cup final, that then go and qualify for the Olympics very soon afterwards. It felt as though it was always going just in one direction, and then there's actually, whoa, it's plateaued a little bit here. Is that too simplifying of what's actually happened?
Yeah, I think when you're in it, I mean, we're addicted to high performance environments, and we love being in that scenario. And I think we as athletes want to continue to drive the sport on to create as many opportunities for the next generation as possible. And I think we have a goal of making hockey in Ireland a bigger sport. And so it's going back to the drawing board as to how that happens. Yes, you need to go to major tournaments, but actually you need to make sure that the structures are in place, that the coaching and the quality and training is in place. And that's a huge part of the next steps for us is really focusing on that, because the competitions and the silverware, that's a byproduct of a very, very successful high performance environment. You can see it in the Irish rugby team pushing to be number one in the world for such a small nation. That's a huge feat. And we as a hockey team, we strive to punch above our weight and put hockey on the map worldwide. And yeah, the competitions are the byproduct, but actually it's about so much more than that.
And is that in place? Because when you make the comparison to the men's rugby team, they have the best of everything. There's no team in the world that have anything that this group can't have access to. When you look around at the teams you're competing against, do you have the similar high performance setup that they have?
I suppose the best way to describe that is we're not full-time professional athletes. And as much as we would love to be, and as much as we are committed in every facet of our lives to playing international sport and representing our country, we have to battle with having jobs alongside of our hockey careers. At the minute, we're 2 days a week as a squad, which is far more than when I began my career. But we need to be full-time athletes. We need to be full-time professionals as a sport, and we should only have to, you know, ask ourselves, do we still love the game? And is my body still allowing me to play the game? Whereas, if I'm honest, you as a hockey player in Ireland and as a female, you also have to ask yourself, well, how does my career fit into this? The older that you get, the sacrifice becomes very different. And the other factor is, as a female, you also, being honest, you're aware that there is a body clock ticking in the back of your head all of the time. And so it's not just as simple as, you know, is my body letting me do it and do I love the game? Which, for a lot of full-time professional athletes, that is the beauty of it for them. So we're balancing a lot of other battles. And I would love in my lifetime if hockey gets to a place where it just comes down to a much simpler idea for an athlete.
You're still a very young woman. You're, what, 29?
Yeah.
It does feel that this, from the outside, is the end of a cycle, that Olympic qualification cycle. Have you been having those conversations yourself internally with people around you as to, do I go through this for another 4 years when you look at career, when you look at what you want to do in your life?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you're constantly weighing up, you know, what's next for yourself. But for me, one of the falters is that we shouldn't think of it in the idea of 4 year cycles. We, as I say, we want hockey to be one of the top sports in Ireland, and we want it to be a successful international sport for us. And so we can't just operate in 4 year cycles. We have to be looking at every competition as an opportunity to do that and to make sure that hockey is a top 10. We are a top 10 nation in what we do. And so it's getting away from those 4 year cycles, which I think is a really, really positive thing. It's the opportunity to go out and represent your country at any competition, and for us to become successful in doing that. And I think with what we've done in the last few years with, you know, the fantastic support we have from SoftCo Park Developments and Sport Ireland to allow us to have a hybrid model has meant that we don't maybe operate in those 4 year cycles as much. And we look at, you know, you look at the 2018 success of the World Cup. We've now gone to back to back World Cups. It's just as big as an opportunity for us as a nation to represent on the world stage. It's the same with European competitions. And now we really have this hunger and desire to play in the Pro League, which our men have qualified for and they're currently playing in. And it's another facet of international hockey that allows you to play at the top level as regularly as possible. And so, you know, for us as athletes to be able to travel annually to play in a Pro League is a huge opportunity. And again, it just is where we want to be as a nation.
That hybrid model, so you're training at the moment 2 days a week. There's pros and there's cons to that, because quite often a hybrid model is professionalism by stealth. So you're only going to get paid for 2 weeks, but you're expected to be available 7 days a week. You're expected to act like a professional 7 days a week. How does that work?
Yeah, I think it's fantastic in comparison to previously, whenever you know, we were coming together at the weekends or in regional sessions in the evening. So it definitely is a step up. And you can see that in the rate at which the younger players who have just come into the hybrid model have progressed and stepped forward in comparison to, you know, it being a little bit slower whenever I was a youngster. And, you know, that's the beauty of it. And you can see the success in it in terms of how well we have progressed and grown. But it does make, for me, the best way to describe it is it makes that recovery piece for your body the hardest part, because we actually train the same amount in the 2 days and we train pre-work and post-work then in the latter end of the week whilst going to day jobs, which...
Well, I guess that's what I'm wondering, that, again, it does sound like it's almost full-time in everything but name. And how does that actually exist then within having a life, having a job,
earning a living? Yeah, so the volume of training is the exact same, but where you lose out is your ability to recover. And, you know, sleep gets deprived, deprived, sorry. And that makes it really, really challenging to make sure that every single session is the absolute maximum for you, because you're balancing your work alongside it. And I mean, that's the battle, is also finding a really, really good employer that supports you and understands that you're splitting your time to be an international athlete at the same time. And that's easier, that's harder to find than you might think.
Yeah, how do the group find out? Because look, I think for a lot of employers, it's a huge asset to have a high performance athlete and a successful Irish international as part of their team. But then there's the practical element of you need them to work. How are you and your teammates finding that balance where you can only work 3 days a week?
Yeah, 3 to 4. So some of the girls have fantastic employers that they have really loyal relationships to, and have been, you know, on their journey for a number of years. But I suppose, like, I'll be honest, I'm in a transition phase now where I'm looking to find that, and it's a challenge. And I suppose that the best way to describe it is that, you know, for the short term, I need your support to allow me to be an international athlete. But hopefully in the long term, the drive and the desire that I give to my sport will be 100% in my work and in my career. And hopefully they can see the value in that. But on the flip side of it, of course, as I said, we're addicted to high performance training environments. And in a perfect world, we would get the opportunity to be athletes all of the time, because I think for that step, we could really, really do great things on the world stage.
How does that step happen?
I think that step happens with additional resources and funding and additional support for us to be able to take the financial strain of needing to work the 3 days a week or 4 days a week off ourselves to purely be able to focus and recover and take things to the next level. That's not to say that without the support that we have gotten in recent years since the World Cup, which has made a huge difference to us, especially with regards to being able to do what we have on a Monday and Tuesday. Like, I did have to pinch myself over the last couple of years sometimes on a Monday morning when I was doing my laps and fitness session in Abbottstown, because
this is your work.
The beauty of it was sensational, but you can't help but, as an athlete, you always strive and want more, because your hunger is to be the best version of yourself, and your hunger as a team is to be the best that you can be. And I believe if we were full-time professionals, that is where that would come from.
There are opportunities in various parts of the world to be a full-time professional. You were in Australia recently. Were you full-time professionals when you went over there?
Yeah, well, we played in a Hockey One League over there, so it was like an interprovincial league.
Okay.
And it was a two-month-long league, so it was a short period of time that we were there for. But every day was just hockey. We weren't focusing on work or study outside of that. And I suppose for me, I'll give you the best example. It meant that I was the fittest I've ever been in my 12 years going into January, but it also meant that I spent the least time on the physio table that I have in the last 5 years, because in the 4 months prior to it, I was just focusing on my body and making sure that I was as best recovered for every single session, because I had the luxury and time to do that, because it was just hockey when we were there. So it was a fantastic opportunity from that perspective, yeah.
Did it make you want more? Did it make you consider actually postponing the move into the real world for a real job for a while and look around Europe for possible full-time opportunities?
Yeah, I think I'm at the stage now where I've played with this team for 12, 13 years maybe, and I love it. I love pulling on a green jersey. I have such pride and passion in representing my country, and my real passion and desire lies in how good we can become as a nation and as a hockey nation, where we can leave the jersey whenever we finish playing to give the best platform to the next generation. And so being in and around the Irish team to allow us to continue to develop and get to that level is definitely where my passion lies with the sport right now.
You're already doing that though. When you look and when you talk about what the current young players are getting to enjoy compared to what you were doing when you started out, the fact that they're even getting the 2 days a week.
Yeah.
Like that's coming from you, your generation, the success that you've had. You must be incredibly proud of that already.
Incredibly proud. And that's where, you know, continuing to push this and seeing where it can go to over more and more time is very, very exciting. And it's exciting for the next generation. And I know that someday I'll be in a rocking chair and I'll be envious of the opportunities that they are getting. But that is a huge part of the legacy that we set, especially, you know, coming home from the World Cup in 2018 and seeing the number of kids that we impacted. That really lit that fire in us. And we talk about it a lot as a squad. And I suppose when you come away from the disappointment that we've experienced in the last month, you have to take it back a level to understanding really why you play. And that definitely comes into it. And we're very proud of where things have got to. We're not stopping here, though. We're hungry to do more.
Well, on those next steps, so hockey is one of those sports that maybe for a large part of the population, we jump on the bandwagon when things are going well, when the World Cup comes around, when Olympics come around. And it is also maybe the best example of how government uses the bandwagon. When we had that day when Shane Ross comes back and he announces extra funding and everyone's delighted, and it turns out actually this was funding that had already been out in the public. And that real sense of, oh, you're just saying this because it's the right thing to say. What has been happening over the last 4 or 5 years since the 2018 World Cup in terms of making those next steps? So obviously you're on to 2 days a week. In terms of government action, in terms of getting more young boys and girls out playing hockey, what are you seeing?
It's the sheer number of kids now playing the sport in comparison. And that's both in the women's and the men's game. You have hockey clubs on the west of Ireland that have hundreds of members and they actually don't have a pitch yet. So the hunger and the desire is there. We just need to support that with the facilities and the resources. And the idea of growing our coaching and the quality of coaching that we have across the country and making sure that as many players that have played the game stay involved in it. You see the beauty of that in the GAA. You see it all the time. And it's making sure that that's happening for us as well. But I suppose, you know, you still meet kids now and that they tell you that they didn't play until they watched that on the television in 2018, and now they love the sport. And the sheer volume of kids playing the sport is fantastic. And in addition to that, the number of the generation above me that have came up and they tell you that they played sport when they played hockey when they were in school, and then they never played, and then they went back to it to play for their club vets team or their club fourths or fifths team just for the love of the game. And that's something that's very special that you don't see in the media, or you only hear about that when someone tells you, and it's fantastic from that perspective.
I guess it all builds towards that ultimate end goal then of the high performance side, that actually having more and more children, you have more and more families, more and more businesses, the commercial side gets better, that the sponsorship side gets better. Like Sofco were in right at the start, and it's still used in presentations as one of the great sponsorship opportunities that they got there right at the beginning of this journey. That if you are to get to that full-time professional status for everybody in the squad, you do need not just government funding, you do need actually a good commercial support base behind that as well.
Yeah, you do. And like you look at what the men have even achieved in the last 12 months and getting into the Pro League, and now they're playing in India in front of hundreds and thousands in India. It's an amazing setup, but so that should be televised.
What is the Pro League?
The Pro League is it's an FIH league that runs every year. There's women's and men's. There's 9 teams in the men's. I think there's maybe 10 in the women's at the minute. And they play against each other consistently throughout the year. So it's competition that those top nations are getting that if you're not in it, you miss out on lots of high quality competition. They meet in three venues throughout the year, and they play like a round robin tournament where they all get to play each other. It's very commercialised. There's good crowds. It's televised across a lot of countries. We need to make sure that our men in the Pro League gets televised soon now too, because again, for kids to see that and the exposure of them playing in an annual league, you know, not dissimilar to what happens with the likes of the Six Nations.
It's the best against the best on a regular basis.
Exactly. And for us now, it's important that as a women's team, we try to get ourselves into that to be able to compete at that level too.
Because how do you get yourself in?
So we have a tournament this year in June. So in a few months, the winner of that tournament qualifies for next year's Pro League. So this year's Pro League is undergoing at the minute, which is what the men are playing in. So that tournament comes up for us in June.
That will be an enormous step forward then, to actually have that regular game time against the other leading nations. And you'd imagine with the training that you're doing, coupled with that actually, that the progress rate could just speed up rapidly.
Yeah, definitely. Since the Pro League began, it's been something that we've felt that we had the ability to play in. We felt like we have the quality to play in, and it again would allow that step towards full-time professional athletes being able to compete consistently on the world stage. And and then it kind of it makes it tricky right now for us to get that consistent high quality competition when we're not in the Pro League, because those teams that are in it, their fixture list is almost taken up for the year with playing in the Pro League. So it makes it really tricky.
But when you're stuck on the outside, it's difficult.
So it definitely, you start to see, does it create a little bit of a gap? So it's closing that gap and getting in there would be massive for us.
One thing you mentioned there, obviously at the period you're in your life, so you're thinking about full-time jobs. You also mentioned the body clock thing. And are we still at the stage where athletes in their late 20s, early 30s, female athletes are thinking, if I want to start a family, I need to retire from the sport?
I think that it's about having the opportunity to focus on just playing the sport for your love of the game, and it's probably the career needing to work alongside it that makes it challenging when you're thinking about, okay, well, what's my next steps after that? Do I want to have a family? Then the career needs to start slightly sooner in terms of your working career in order to be able to support yourself to allow that to happen. So it definitely comes into it as a female, but what we need to strive for is that females are playing the sports and competing in the sports that they love for as long as possible, and that they don't have additional pressures.
Are there mothers in any mothers in the current squad?
Currently there's not. It's something that I would love to see in the game of hockey. I would.
And have you spoken about that with the governing body as to how they would be able to respond to make sure it was possible for a player to come back into the sport after having a baby?
We haven't, but I've no doubt if we were in a position where that was something that needed to be discussed, I've no doubt the governing body would support it. I think we're at a place now where it could be very much possible for a female to come on tour and bring their baby with them, and I've no doubt that us as a team, that would only add to our culture and connection as a group.
Yeah, it sounds from talking to you that the biggest miss isn't actually those couple of weeks in Paris later in the year. It's actually those months in between where you would just get to spend so much time together that actually you're going to have a bit of time apart, which is not what you want.
Yeah, we're a family, and that includes our support staff. What we've built and created over the last couple of years, it's such a special thing, and no book or no article or no media interview is ever going to be able to properly portray how special an environment that is. And I suppose for years and years to come, we'll get together and we'll be able to discuss really what that felt like. And going into battle together when you're that connected is a really, really special thing. And being able to do it, knowing that your whole nation is behind you and supporting you, it's that part that makes the pain that little bit worse and harder to overcome because you know that, that was really such a special thing.
Yeah. 13 years into it now with the senior international team, even with the recent disappointment, it doesn't sound like your love of it has waned in any way.
Yeah, I think that the desire is so important in high performance sport, and I certainly still have a hunger and desire for it. You just want to make sure that you're continually bringing the best version of yourself to it and serving the team as best as they need. And we have a really special group, and until I stop enjoying it, I think I'll always have the hunger to be there. It's just making sure that other parts of my life support me to do so.
How are you going to deal with getting a real job? Remember, everybody isn't as focused on the high performance element.
Yeah,
some people just turn up 9 to 5, you know.
That's the battle is convincing people that high performance sport is incredibly valuable in a workplace environment, and the skills and experience that you have from being in that environment are very, very adaptable. And I believe that a lot of athletes have been very successful in taking that next step into the workplace. So for me, that's the conversations that are going on at the minute for me to find the right thing and something that I love too.
I don't think you're going to have too much of a challenge getting a job over the next little while. Listen, thanks a million for coming in. We look forward to following you over the coming months. As you say, this is certainly not the end of the journey for you or for this team either. But Katie Mullen, thanks a million.
Thanks for having me.